Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
"Are the nets cast?" my father shouted from just feet away. His wrinkled hands were planted softly on the wheel of our modest trawler. The boat rocked calmly to the soft push of waves. The salty air threatened to dry my tongue out if I dared speak a word. "One more to go," I called. Most trawlers had an automatic way to cast nets and bait. My father stubbornly stuck to what he called the good old-fashioned way, but I'd say otherwise. I took the final cast net, cleared it off tangles, and then wrapped the white material around my arms a few times and threw it with steady hands. The net hit the water surface with a satisfying gloop and sunk below. I joined my father at the helm as he slowly steered the boat through the water. Net fishing is a family business, and despite only being 14, my father wanted me to prepare to take over. I don't mind the sea, and the strange freedom that comes with travelling on a boat in the sun. I like how the wind softly brushes past me at low speeds, and how little splashes of water occasionally cool me down when it's warm. And I can't wait until I get to drive. In the distance were other trawlers, but of bigger sizes, all funded by Sato Fishing Co. Their nets were mechanical and bright red, since it's the first colour to disappear in the ocean. Dad must have noticed me staring as he grunted out of annoyance. "Traitors," he huffed. "Robots will take everybody's job soon." It was easy enough for him to say. I've been casting all of his nets since I was 10. The sea was quiet. Between casting the nets and pulling them back up, I'd often pick up a boot or nap. It was boring. At 14, I wanted to meet friends or sleep in, not get up before dawn and sail out to sea. I must have been there a few minutes when the air turned cold. The sun's intensity stopped, and its assault on my closed eyelids ended. A series of panicked mutters and shuffling came from my father's direction, and I opened my eyes to dark skies. An eerie horn echoed through the area, and accompanying it came wild tides as the sound made the water dance. "Dad?" I shouted in worry. The fear caused my throat to crack in pitch. "Is it?" I didn't dare finish my sentence. "It can't be. It's earlier than last time," my father stuttered. "Nets up, now," he commanded. The boat came to a halt, and my father and I rushed to pull the nets up, and my shaky hands struggled to keep a decent grip on the hand lines. "Dad, is it here?" I cried out, my hands burning from the rough rope. My father never sailed out when the Umubozo was due to visit. "Dad?" I squeaked out as he silently lifted the mostly empty nets. "Quiet," he hissed. With the nets up, my father hurried to the helm, and we headed back towards the village. Our trawler bounced over each wave, and with each jump, I was flung across the deck. It wasn't until I was knocked towards a bench that I could climb on top of it and straddle it for stability. Darkened water splashed onto the boat, the liquid assaulted me from each direction, and I struggled to keep my eyes open. The few fish in the nets flopped wildly, or some lay still after hitting the deck harshly. The ocean ceased fire for a moment as my gaze locked on a large trawler. The boat rocked harshly to a point where I feared it would tip over. Water once again attacked me, and I was forced to shut my stinging eyes. I was frightened to the point where my brain could only focus on just how scared I was. I couldn't think of how much my eyes hurt from the salty sea. But when I finally opened them again, the fear only multiplied when I searched for the trawler from earlier. It was gone. I forced myself up on shaky feet, my knees threatened to buckle me over, and with each wave, I nearly collapsed. My eyes scanned the ocean in a rush as I quickly oriented myself. I checked the horizon. It was really gone. I stared on in disbelief as a rounded shape poked out of the ocean and towards me. I swear, for a moment, it looked at me. The next wave knocked me back over. I slipped, and my knees scraped the damp wooden deck harshly. I crawled towards the helm cabin where my father was, my bloodied knees leaving a trail that soon washed away by the ocean. I woke up with an ungodly scream. A noise I'd never heard escaped my mouth before, and my mother came rushing into my room, and, as if by routine, she wrapped her arms around me and soothed me. "You're at home. You're okay," she repeated softly. Her fingers ran through my short hair gently, and I found myself melting in her embrace. Moments of silence passed in a hurry, and I felt her part her lips again to speak. "So, today then?" I nodded at her. "For the past 3 years, I've been able to predict the tri-yearly visit for the Yumi Bozo." My mother calmly rose from my bed and headed to the landline, ready to alert all fleets before they went out into danger. Not that they listened anyway. The bigger trawlers, especially the ones funded by Seitoko, never listened to the warnings. They paid their fishermen extra and sent them off with empty barrels to confuse the Yumi Bozo. There is folklore to suggest giving it empty barrels to confuse it. Not that it's worked. It takes one trawler and its crew every 3 months. My village, Ina, has only the bare necessities, with only one convenience store and not much to do. It had been rare to come across any tourists until 10 years ago. A large bone jaw sat chained to a pole in the center of our village, mere seconds from the ocean. The jaw belonged to a sea beast that ate all of the fish surrounding the town. I was only very young when this happened, but Seito Hiratami and his fleet managed to surround the creature with his nets and kill him. Hiratami himself dragged the dead animal to the shore with his boat and spent hours carving out its jaw to make sure that even in the afterlife, it didn't take our fish. That's one of the reasons Seitoko nets are so popular. However, even though Seito Hiratami saved a small fishing village from the fish-eating beast, it brought along another being that didn't feed on fish, but took down entire boats. I ran my hand across the bone carefully. Despite the 10 years, it had been sitting out in different weather conditions, and it didn't look aged at all. It was huge too, bigger than an orca. Plus, it had a strange roundness to it. I couldn't pinpoint it to any of the sea creatures I knew of. I stared out to the dock. Many of the smaller boats had decided to stay today, including my dad's same old trawler he's always had. I hadn't been on it since the incident 3 years ago. I was relieved that most of the family-owned boats were tied up and secure. In the distance, I could spot a large trawler. The rest, I imagine, had gone past the rocky bank. My attention was captured by the mutterings in an open building nearby. "It's coming sooner and sooner," a male voice complained. "It's every 2 months now," he added. Was it? I never kept track of it. It made sense though, as it felt like I had that nightmare more often. "He's a Sugimoto kid. He must be cursed. How else does he know when the Yumi Bozo will arrive?" another voice rang. This one was much more familiar. "Plus, his scum father is one of the reasons the family companies won't buy my nets." It was Seito Hiratami. "Maybe we should feed the son to the Yumi Bozo?" the first voice asked. He received a grunt of agreement from Seito. I looked back at the bone and the date engraved on the plaque. And suddenly, it all made sense. This all started because of Seito. This creature is angry because we killed it, right? It must be its ghost. I wanted to run into the building and tell them I'm not cursed, that maybe if we put the jaw back, perhaps the Yumi Bozo would leave us be. But I knew it would be a waste of breath. The sky began to darken yet again, and the same horn echoed through the village. Goosebumps stood tall on my skin, and my body froze in fear. I had to do it now. I rushed into my father's boat and grabbed the bolt clippers he kept in the cabin. While everybody panicked and ran inside, I release the jaw from the metal restraints and tie the rope around it. I could fix this. I took the rope back to the boat and secured it tightly. My dad kept spare keys and a fake fish in the bait box so that I could start the ship with ease. I'd never driven it before, but the adrenaline pushed me forward, and I could get it running. The engine bubbled and soon began propelling. The boat rushed ahead. Once the rope was stretched out, I had trouble moving forward, as if the jaw was too heavy. I pressed for more power, and eventually the bone began scraping against the ground. It left a gash in the earth behind it. The boat's engine growled as it struggled to pull, but ultimately the jaw hit the ocean. Now it was in the water, and it was much easier to pull forward. The choppy waves sent the boat further. I watched as the jaw dropped down into the darkness of the ocean. It's deep around here. In fear of it taking the ship with it, I cut the rope loose. And then I saw it. In the distance, a giant creature traveling through the water towards me. The shape was uniquely rounded, like something I had only seen once before. I rushed back to the helm and started the boat back up, and the panic soon set in. The waves around me roughened and aggressively shoved the trawler side to side. It made it difficult to drive, and I had a hard time trying to turn it around. Just as I had faced the village, something shot up out of the water. A massive creature, 80 feet in size and a perfectly circular mouth, wide enough to fit tens of my little trawlers inside. This thing wasn't a ghost. The movement of the beast sent my boat backwards and further into the ocean. I stared into the void of its humongous mouth, past the rows of sharpened teeth, and saw only blackness. I saw death. The rotting stench of decomposition invaded my nostrils and caused my eyes to water. The creature breathed in deeply with an open mouth and then shut its jaws in a snap. The sheer force of the moving water underneath me caused me to topple over and hit my head off the wooden floor. A sharp pain traveled down my spine, and I grew dizzy, too dizzy to stand up. I passed out. When I woke up, I was back home. One of the families nearby had been able to witness the entire thing from the dock, and when the creature disappeared back into the water after its encounter with me, they came out and got me. The beast took 3 of the Sato trawlers that day, but not me. After that, it began to attack every 2 weeks. Many people refused to go out and fish, which meant many family companies began to suffer greatly. My father lectured me multiple times and even banned me from his boat. His dreams of fishing with his son had sunk, just like the jaw. One day, I double-checked the bait box and found he had moved the spare key. His ship was deemed a good luck charm, and companies began to ask my dad to lead them out to sea. There were theories that our boat warded off the Yumibozo. One day, Sato even offered my dad a large sum of money to go out on his boat with a few of his fleet. He agreed. I feared Sato had tried to kill my father, but when he was the only boat to come out of that alive, and after this encounter, I was surprised. After that, my dad withdrew from fishing and hid in his workhouse for days. What was so different about our boat? I started to look into the differences, and it became a new obsession. It wasn't the shape or size or the color of the boats. They were very similar, except the ones that were attacked were much bigger. "Homura," my friend Yua called out to me. I'd been zoning out in class again. "Should we get some milk from the canteen?" I shook my head, and Yua sighed. "What's wrong with you?" she asked. "It's just these boats and the disappearances," I began. "There's no difference. None of the family boats are getting attacked. It's just the big ones. It's not like they look like food. They have red nets," I huffed. "I mean, there's redfish in the ocean," Yua mumbled. "Kimnadai, sea breams. I'm sure there's more too. When you get to a certain depth, red disappears though. Whatever it is, it wouldn't have been able to see from below the surface." "That seems dumb," she offered. Yua's lack of concern soothed me, and a smile temporarily set my mind at ease. I passed the dock on the way from school. The ground was still raised and torn up from when I pulled the jaw across it. I looked towards the ocean, where the jaw was most likely sitting at the bottom. If it wasn't a ghost, then who did the jaw belong to? I would have thought it belonged to a smaller version of the creature with how rounded the appendage was. My hands slapped my mouth and I let out a gasp. Did we kill its baby? I shook my head and stared out to the horizon where the ocean met the sky. The jaw was huge, but compared to the beast I encountered, it was tiny. I ran home faster than I ever had before and began searching up on the internet for any hint of what the creature could be. I searched up everything imaginable and looked up multiple indexes of big sea beasts. None of the images matched up to what I saw that day. Everything about this creature didn't make sense, from its perfectly circular mouth to its enormous size, plus the fact it was eating ships. There's no way it got any sort of nutrition from the boats. Was it from this world? If we could believe in things like umibozos, then who's to say that other things didn't exist? I approached my father about the situation, how the creature could be acting on revenge or justice, and how it's only attacking boats with the red nets. I hadn't expected him to believe me so early, but he was making essential calls by the morning. Sato hesitantly sent a single fleet out with regular nets and the rest with red, soon seeing results. But once they scrapped the red nets for standard nets, the beast began to act out. Rather than attack boats, the creature bit away at the ocean floor as if it was heading towards the village, and after 3 weeks, it was able to reach the docks. Sato would stand at the docks, a harpoon in one hand and a cigarette in the other. If you asked him what he was doing, he would simply proclaim, "I killed the last one, I can kill this one, easy." He showed no remorse. He even cracked a joke about using its bones to make more nets, as he did with the last beast that threatened our village. His attitude made my jaw clench. The next day, the creature sat below the dock for the entire day. Sato did nothing. He refused to look at the being and retreated to his factory for an emergency. During the night, the family boats were devoured by the beast. There were questions on whether it had become impatient, but somebody claimed they saw Sato throwing his red nets on them. The creature disappeared for a few days. People were enraged. Their lives had been eaten away in mere seconds. They held their anger to the beast, and despite the dock CCTV being erased, a nearby private camera caught Sato in action, throwing the red net over each of the boats. The atmosphere was tense, yet nobody dared speak up, and the silence only worsened the mood. It took one person to call out, and it took one person to say, "It's Sato's doing," for the whole town to break into a riot. Sato fled into his home and hid inside, and a crowd followed behind. He refused to enter the village. He didn't want to acknowledge his disrespect to the creature and his slaughtering of the baby beast. Sato refused to believe that he did not save the village. Instead, he endangered it. The beast returned and sat at the dock, its mouth open at the edge. The same loud horn echoed non-stop throughout the village from the beginning, and everyone panicked to stop it. The town sacrificed food and fish. They pleaded with the creature and promised they would never do it again. But the sea beast didn't stop. The horn was deafening. I wondered if it was a battle cry or mourning its loss. Either way, it had to stop. My father had enough. With a red net in hand, he headed to Sato's house and pushed through the crowd. "Sato," he boomed, but Sato continued to hide. "Come out and be a man about it." There were no movements from the inside. My father was strong. We didn't need tough doors in a small village like ours. He kicked Sato's in a few tries. A few of the men charged in with him, and they exited out with Sato and his young daughter, Yua. The two were tangled in a mass of red rope. My father and the group of men began to push them. The two stumbled over the abundance of material and their own feet. Yua hit the floor at some point, but they kept pushing and pushing. Saito managed to pull Yura up, and before they knew it, they were on the wooden platform on the dock. "Please, not Yura. Don't do this to my Yura," Saito sobbed. I believed him. At that moment, he was a father pleading for his daughter. "She didn't do anything. She didn't know. I'm the only one that knew." The reveal that Saito knew caused an uproar. People pushed past each other, wanting to be the one to harm Saito, but my father and his friends kept them back. I turned my attention from Saito to Yua, and she was staring at me, eyes puffed as she was sobbing her eyes out, and her body spotted with mud and stone. I didn't say anything. I couldn't. I just stared back until they were led further into the dock. Everybody followed behind, shouting and jeering at the two. The horn sound grew louder and louder as the two approached, and we took it as a sign that this was the right thing. Now, on the edge, Saito's pleading became more erratic. "Not Yua, not Yua," he sobbed. They both refused to face the creature. "Turn around," my father demanded. Saito didn't oblige, but Yua turned and stared into the mouth of the creature. My dad physically turned Saito around, and all the color drained from his face. Yua let out a shriek. The shock caused her to drop to her knees, and her tears dropped into the abyss below. From here, I could see the familiar black descent into nothingness, and the smell of rot was far much more potent than when I encountered it. I scanned the faces of the villagers around me. Nobody had dared come to the dock while he was here, and it was their first time encountering it. Saito was silent. I stole a glance and saw him pull Yura up and hold onto one of her hands to pray. It felt like the air was getting heavier. My eardrums ached from the drone of the creature, and it felt like they were ready to burst. Then, without saying anything, my father pushed them in. I watched as they fell into the nothingness of the creature's mouth, and the dark abyss consumed the two. After 10 years, the beast had gotten its justice. I wiped my cheek, thinking that the sea had splashed me yet again, but I was met with an abundance of tears. The creature quietened down, and its mouth snapped shut. A short push of wind brushed through the village, and then the beam dropped into the water and disappeared.
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo
und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.